You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Today marks 5 years since Sung Hee Cho killed 32 people and injured 25 others at Virginia Tech, the deadliest shooting in U.S. history. But school violence began long before the tragedy in Columbine, and it's continued in the 5 years since the Virginia Tech shooting. This February, a student with a handgun murdered 3 students at Ohio's Chardon High School, and just this month, a former student shot and killed 9 students and a school secretary at Oikos University in Oakland, California. Joining us now is Rebecca Coffey, who writes for Scientific American and Discover magazine. Her new book is Murders Most Foul, The School Shooters in Our Midst. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Is it just a reflection of media coverage, or have school shootings actually increased over the past 5 years?
No, they're actually slightly down. They were at a real peak in the 90s, and they're very, very slightly down from there. But by and large, schools are a safer place than they used to be. There are few murders overall in schools than there were in decades past.
When we approach shootings as a crime, is there a significant difference between a shooting at, say, a high school and one at a college or a university?
No, there's not. What people make a distinction between is shootings in which one or two people are killed and then public multi-victim slaughter-style shootings.
So how do we interpret the statistics? If you say that there's been a slight decline in school shootings, is that because of prevention efforts? Or what are the multiple things that contribute to how many school shootings there are?
I think, by and large, high schools and middle schools are less hellish environments than they used to be because of all of the efforts that were brought into place by school counselors after the real surge in school shootings began in the 1990s. So that the environments are less hellish and that school counselors are more likely to be able to spot a problem kid and get some help for that problem kid. I don't think the same efforts are in play at universities. I don't think that counselors keep as close an eye on what's happening on campus there.
But is there the same things that contribute to a school shooting? Let me walk you through the various things that people say cause in most part or in large part to school shootings. And let's get your reaction to each of these. We're speaking with Rebecca Coffey, who writes for Scientific American and Discover magazine. The first one is what it sounds like you were alluding to, bullying. In fact, according to the National Crime Prevention Program, harassment and bullying have been linked to 75% of school shooting incidents.
Right. That may be true. However, the FBI has given up advising schools to use such things in trying to figure out who is going to shoot. They used to spend a lot of effort creating what they thought was a school shooter profile so that you could catch the kid when he walked in the door, right? There he matches. And there were a lot of things. He was bullied, he plays too many video games, he watches too much violent TV, et cetera, et cetera. And that is true of many, many, many school shooters. However, it's also true of almost every kid every day. And so they realized that as they took these psychological and sociological aspects and tried to create them into a profile, they were drawing a picture of every high school kid. And so they've abandoned that approach and said it doesn't make any sense to really look for a school shooter profile. What makes better sense is to understand that these aren't impulsive actions, that they're planned for days, weeks, months. Columbine was planned for over a year. And that during that time of brooding and planning, the person who's going to act out will usually what they call leak. He will drop hints. Or he will say it directly. One middle school kid said, "I got a lot of killing to do." And a high school freshman jumped up on a cafeteria table and shouted, "You're all going to die." Now, this wasn't as he was pointing the gun. This was in the days before.
That's a clue.
Sometimes it comes out in their homework. A 16-year-old boy, Luke Woodham in Pearl, Mississippi, when he was in eighth grade, his homework was filled with off-topic references to carnage. In response to a question about what would you do if you were a teacher for a day, he described how he would kill everyone. So that they're really telling people what they're about to do. And what's happening is we're not picking up on the clues or we're not taking the clues seriously. And I think one of the problems right now is the zero tolerance policy in school, because if you talk about violence, often with many policies, you're out. You might even be in juvenile detention center. So kids are reluctant to turn each other in.
I see. All right. So let's move on to number two, another thing that people say contributes to school shootings, and that's lax gun laws. What do we know about the connection between the gun laws in a state and the amount of violence on campuses?
That's pretty interesting. There's been there was a study that came out right around the time of Columbine, and these researchers looked at 18 years of crime data, and they associated slaughter-style killings, those public multi-victim killings, with gun laws. And they found that in states with lax gun laws, states where you were allowed to carry a concealed weapon, there were way, way fewer deaths.
Fewer
deaths. And they were surprised by this, but they thought that maybe what was happening here was that that the gun laws were making slaughter-style killings uneconomical. If everybody out there is carrying a gun and you pull yours, you may die before you can create carnage, so that the price of slaughter is higher than the benefit. Now, there were real flaws with that study. And the biggest flaw was that they excluded from the data set mob and gang slaughters. And they did so because they said, well, the victims probably had guns on them. Well, right, but that's a huge portion of the slaughter-style killings. And so they've taken them out of the data set. And not only that, those were people who were dead. So imagine how they would have changed the numbers. So it was a useless study, but it caught a lot of air.
Absolutely. Rebecca Coffey, a science journalist, writes for Discover magazine, among others. Her new book is called Murder's Most Foul, The School Shooters in Our Midst. And that brings us to the third most mentioned cause for school shootings, and that's the lack of good mental health care. And to a certain extent, that may connect back up to bullying. But a lot of talk about students not getting the kind of in-depth counseling that they need, people not noticing or understanding when a cue is that a student is
right.
in need of,
That's
of
right.
counseling.
And that gets back to what the FBI is telling schools to do now. Listen for leakage and make sure that the school has strong and open communication with mental health agencies and police so that you are getting help for those kids, that you are throwing a safety net around them that keeps them safe and keeps everybody safe.
But doesn't that cost money?
That's the problem. Nobody's funded for this. The FBI has made clear guidelines, but they're not a mandate, and they're not even an unfunded mandate. They're just something that they suggest, and most schools have no money.
Even if they wanted to implement them,
even
that would be impossible.
Even if they wanted to. You know, this is the kind of thing, if you're going to take every threat seriously, you have to actually you have to separate the wheat from the chaff. And you can't just have one person doing that whimsically. You really have to set up a committee, and the committee has to meet once a week. And, you know, you need a system in place. You need to bring a lot of minds into play, and there's no money and no time for that.
How do you do that? How do you separate just the random, not always smart things that kids say that may sound like a threat from an actual threat?
Well, if you have your eyes closely enough on your student body, you know what the family situation is, what the social situation is. And the FBI gives you a kind of a weighted system. Take all of these things into effect. And so if it adds up to something that looks significant, you have to take that seriously and get that kid help. If this seems like a perfectly great kid and upon investigation he gives a reason for why he said that, he probably deserves an entirely different kind of response.
But before we scare all of the parents out there in our listening audience, let me go back to what you said at the beginning, which is actually campuses right now
are much safer. They're really safe places to be. Look, these happen at McDonald's, they happen at shopping malls, they happen at post offices. Sometimes people go crazy and commit slaughter, and that happens at school as well. And in fact, at school, there's a much bigger chance that an adult is going to catch on and step in and stop what's happening.
All right. Now we can all calm down just a little. Rebecca Coffey, science journalist, writes for Discover magazine. She's author of the new book, Murder's Most Foul, The School Shooters in Our Midst. Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.